You are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay originally aired on January 15th, 1988.
I have shared before my delight at the fact that increasingly people are learning to get out and enjoy the winter world. I can recall back in the early days as director of the Rogers Center at Sherburn, how we struggled to get a few people to break that winter pack they had with the hearth side and the easy chair. A few cross-country skiers did, a few snowshoers, and an occasional backpacker. In those days, backpacking was actually more popular than cross-country skiing. They'd turn out for such events as owl howls, big game safaris, that's following little tracks, and bushwhacking. That was visiting all the places you couldn't get to without that enabling bridge of ice and snow. They were good outings, but hardly anyone is left, I would guess, who still remembers. The participants were few. I remember especially the first winter we had heat in the dormitory. A group of hikers holding a retreat at the Rogers were snowed in, cooped up in a winter wonderland. These were people prepared to challenge winter, whatever it offered. They even wanted to take a hike in the middle of the blizzard. We did. But many, even of those hardy souls, dropped out before we'd made the two-thirds of a mile circuit of the main trail loop. Of course, in those conditions, trails didn't mean much, nor did ponds or wetlands. We wandered a serendipitous route. Some said afterwards they had never until that moment really appreciated the relief offered by the lee side of a shrub packed with snow, or of an arborvitae hedge similarly festooned. It wasn't hard to understand why deer, coon, or partridge were reluctant to leave their sheltered retreats in such conditions. What a difference 24 hours can make. The next morning dawned bright and sunny, exposing a real fairyland. We retraced our steps, finding little evidence that we had even been there before. Every shrub and tree wore a white cap pulled low to the windward. Every tree trunk supported a vertical column of snow plastered tight to the windward surface of the trunk, and pine, spruce, and cedar were well covered, their branches bending low with the added weight. It was indeed beautiful and exhilarating. Cameras clicked, and people spoke in subdued tones, awed by the beauty. Wildlife had not waited long after the passing of the storm to get out and explore. Rest days are not taken by wildlife without some loss. They work long hours without holidays to ensure survival. The deep snow wore an intricate tracery of rabbit tracks. Here we discovered where a rabbit had dined on the seeds of buttonbush. In another spot, the object of attention was milkweed. Untouched seeds and the absence of down made us wonder what the rabbit actually ate. I voted for seeds, but some of the group were certain the rabbit had actually eaten the down. Rabbits weren't all that was moving either. We found evidence out on the marsh that a pair of cock pheasants had been tuning up their jousting skills, preparing for the territorial battles of spring. Most of this contest is always really just shadow boxing, but we did find a few burnished maroon feathers in the snow. Later on from the gallery window, we saw the pair dining with several hens at the base of a button bush. Peace reigned now where a few hours earlier war games had been the order of the hour. The best moment of that outing came along the river trail when a rough grouse erupted from a snowbank where it had apparently waited out the storm in the security of its own little snow cave. It took off with a shower of snow and a thunder of wings. It was the only time in years of leading winter walks that a group of people had observed this common occurrence with me. I told them how once in the Brookfield Forest area I had encountered a grouse apparently trapped in the snow by a crust of ice. Only its head protruded from a small hole from which it frantically tried to escape. With a sturdy arrowhead stave, I carefully removed the entrapping ice cap. The grouse, in its haste to be elsewhere, didn't pause to thank me. The second most memorable event of our post-blizzard walk was a pileated woodpecker which came directly toward us across the Shenango River. I had spotted it afar and pointed it out, but my companions were sure it was just a crow. It was great to see their eyes widen in amazement as the bird approached. The pileated has that effect on people who see it for the first time. It landed in a basswood perhaps 30 feet away, loudly protesting our intrusion into its domain. Its scarlet crest raised as if to emphasize its agitation. I hope if you get out to ski or snowshoe or just slog about in the snow, you get off the beaten path and search for signs of wild company. That's all I have for this week. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.